This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That's to the head, Cajon. Markstrom, who has never been beaten by the Blackhawks in regulation, cleared it ahead. It didn't get out. Now by back in front. Strom put it across. What a play! Dylan Strom, a blind pass to Alex DeBrincat. He could not have seen him. He sensed him. And it's 3-2.
Welcome back to hour two of our program this afternoon, everybody. Again, I cannot thank you enough for being with us. I am Hub Arkish with you until 4 o'clock. Chris Dickens is here in the production booth. Will join us on the air occasionally with some bits of wisdom as well. Love taking your phone calls, but we've also got an incredible lineup of guests for you right now. And what we're going to do next is head out to the United Center, where Jimmy Greenfield, who does such a great job for the Chicago Tribune covering the Hawks, is with us. You can follow him on Twitter at JCGreenX. And Jimmy, thank you so much for taking time out. I think the Hawks are one of the best stories in Chicago right now, and not enough people are watching and talking. You're riding a six-game win streak, and I keep hearing people say, well, should they focus on the future or whatever? I realize there's a bunch of teams in a heap there, but when you're 2 points or 3 points out of a playoff spot in the NHL, of course you want to go for the playoffs, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big question is how do you go for it? Do you just let this team ride it out? Do you maybe pick up a piece here and there? And, you know, because the Blues and the Wild are not only, even the Blues specifically, are ahead of them, they're also have a few games in hand, so it's even tougher to get in there. And the Blues are winning today again, so it's going to be a tough ride, but, you know, Blackhawks can put together 8-10 wins in a row, which they may have to, then they stay in the race.
Well, and the tough thing is that you've got so many teams in a similar spot. You talk about having to leapfrog 4 or 5 teams. But there's 27 games left. I mean, when you're down to 10, 12, 14 games, you worry about that. But with this much of the season, I mean, you're talking about a full, more than a third of the season, you just go out and play every night and pile up points, don't you? I mean, because the natural attrition is some of these other teams, not everybody in that group of 5 or 6 is going to keep winning.
Right, right. And the way I look at it is you kind of just want to focus on the one team who's ahead. And to me, that has been the Blues. They're about to pass the Wild in terms of the second wild card spot, so maybe it's the Wild you focus on. You can't focus on all of the teams. You got to just maybe look at the one team that's ahead of you. And, you know, the hard thing is going to be not just winning, but, you know, hoping that other people help you. They only play Blues one more time. I don't think they play the Wild again this season, maybe once. So they're going to need a ton of help from other teams to get there.
So, Jimmy, let's kind of start at the top and work our way down. The most obvious question, and, you know, I have a couple thoughts as a fan, but they're not going to be as significant as yours. Why are they winning now? I mean, I know the power play, obviously, a huge part of it, but they've gone from the worst team in hockey to, I know the Flyers got beat the other night, so I think they're the hottest team in hockey right now. What happened? Why are they suddenly winning hockey games?
It's not just a power play, which has been sort of historically great. I mean, they're scoring at a 40% rate, which over 20 games is, I think, the second best in the entire history of the Blackhawks. So the power play can't be downplayed. But not just the power play, but Kane and Taves and DeBrincat and Strome, they're scoring a ton away from the power play. The big issue is going to be is can they get any kind of help from the third and fourth lines, because those guys have been a little bit better. Saad has been a little bit better, but they just all season have not been able to get help outside of their top four. And aside from those guys, you know, the goaltending has been very, very good. Cam Ward has been very good. He's been splitting time with Colin Delia. They each have 3 wins on this 6-game streak. They're stealing wins occasionally. They're playing well enough to win when they're not playing at their best. So that's what's been happening. And the schedule has also lightened up. They're not playing the Lightning and the Predators all the time. They've been beating teams that they should be beating, just like today. They have to win today. They can't lose to the Red Wings at home. So the schedule has been to their favor in the last few games.
Jimmy, I know you've written about it. I know I hear John talk about it on the radio and Pat on TV, and yet I get a sense that most of Chicago doesn't realize that both Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews are on career best paces in terms of scoring.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's their best hockey, but they're having two of the best years of their careers, and you just don't hear much about it.
No, and I think that comes out of the team just sort of not getting the kind of publicity they have when they were, you know, contending for the cups. I've never had more fun watching Patrick Kane as a player. Every time he touches the puck now, you think he's going to do something amazing. The power play, the other thing about the power play is they were 3-for-37 on the power play in Jeremy Colliton's first 15 games as head coach. They were terrible. So watching what they're doing now with, which is really led by Eric Gustafson being on the point, has been amazing. When Kane gets the puck, he can find anybody. He's putting the puck underneath sticks. He's finding open men all the time. And DeBrincat in his ability to one-time shots has been amazing. It's just been a lot of fun. And if you saw Toews' game-winning goal the other night, he powered through the defenseman and put the puck over the shoulder of a goalie when it really seemed like he had no play. So these guys, you know, who were both 30, who both turned 30 this year, dedicated themselves in the offseason to getting in great shape. And they've always been in pretty good shape, but something special happened this year, and it's all paying off for them.
You know, I think Kaner's been so great in recent years that it's not surprising what he's doing, but it's quite a bounce back after a couple of, you know, question marks for Toews. What has been the difference for him?
For him, it has been, you know, just getting in great shape and being able to, he's a two-way player, so he's going to, you know, he's going to be playing on the power play, he's killing penalty. He does everything. He's able to succeed on every level, and he has to a certain extent, but the scoring just hasn't been there. This year, he's scoring goals. He got off to a great start, so he slowed down a little bit, but now he's back on track, and he's got a point a game, close to a point a game for the first time in his career. He's just a special player, and he's proving it.
Probably fair to say that one of the major differences in this team and the frustration of the last year or two, you know, Corey Crawford, obviously we're all concerned about him. We hated to see him go down. Hopefully he'll be back. Hopefully he'll be better. But Colin DeLeo, I'm sorry, about as interesting as it gets right now. I mean, is this kid part of the future of the Chicago Blackhawks?
He's certainly playing like it. Cam Ward isn't going to be back next year, almost certainly, and you know, you don't know what's going to happen with Crawford, but Colin DeLeo, who's really an interesting guy, very, very dedicated player, came up and immediately, you know, became, if not the starter, but just somebody who was capable of playing in the NHL. He was leading the AHL in save percentage. He was showing he was probably ready, but no one, you never know until you get up here. He was the starting goalie in that Scott Foster game from last season when he had a couple of starts. And he'd one bad game, one good game, you never knew. And he came up and he's been terrific from the get-go. He hasn't had really any clunker of games. He's had a few games where he's been average, but by and large, he's been, he's had games where he's stopped 40, 45 shots and you know, just stolen games for the team. And that's what they needed. And I think he certainly has shown he's capable of being a starter, you know, when the time comes. Crawford has one season left. He started to practice again this week. So, you know, there's a possibility he returns this year and next year. It's up to him. We'll see what he does. But you got to figure he'll play out his contract next year, as long as he's healthy.
Visiting with Jimmy Greenfield, he's out at the UC. The Hawks and the Detroit Red Wings getting ready to drop the puck in just a little while. Blackhawks currently the hottest team in the NHL, riding that six-game win streak, just a couple points out of the second wild card spot and trying to get to the playoffs. Tell me about Dylan Strome. He's a player who I hadn't really focused on much until the other night. He had the three-assist game against Vancouver, I think it was. Part of the future here, movable piece. Where is he at?
Definitely not a movable piece. He's someone that has quickly established himself as a core player. He was the number three pick in the draft about 4 years ago, and got off to a slow start with the Coyotes in his career. And you know, 48 games in his career in November, he'd only scored 16 points, and he was kind of being viewed as kind of a bust. You know, number three picks can't starts that slowly, and they need to score more. And so they pulled off the trade for Nick Schmaltz, and the Hawks even got a second player in the deal, and Brendan Perlini. And it was a good deal to start with. You know, Schmaltz was playing well for the Coyotes, but Strome came in, and he immediately clicked with Kane. He was an old teammate of Alex DeBrincat in junior hockey, and they've been playing well together. And there's just something different about him that he wasn't showing with the Coyotes. He's confident. He's fearless in front of the net. He's just become somebody who is dependent upon, you know, in a way that, you know, Schmaltz wasn't when he was here. You know, Schmaltz had this reputation for not really being confident enough to get shots off. And Strome is a different kind of player, but he's been consistent in the time he's been here. And it's a trade that is definitely working out for the Hawks. Strome has, I think he's got one more year left on his deal before he's even a restricted free agent. So he's got a good run in Chicago, probably.
Jimmy Greenfield, again, covers the Blackhawks for the Tribune. You follow him on Twitter at JCGreenX. And, Jimmy, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, I know as recently as last week there was talk about Seabrook being asked to waive his no-move clause. Keith, I know, has played a little better as of late. Not that he was awful, but he hadn't really been Duncan Keith. Are they here? I know Keith is. Is Seabrook going to be here at the end of the season if this team's in the playoffs?
I would think, you know, as long as the Hawks are in the playoff race by February 25th, the trade deadline, it's hard to see anybody going. The problem with Seabrook is not just that he's older and he's declining. It's that his contract makes him very, very hard to move. There are always ways to, you know, make deals and, you know, figure out ways to do it. But he has got 5 years left at nearly $7 million a season, and it makes it that much more difficult. Add in that he has control over whether he gets traded, and he's given no indication he's willing to get traded. It's going to be very, very difficult for Seabrook to go anywhere. And the same thing applies to Keith, with every element being a little bit better. His contract's fewer years, it's less dollars, and he's right now a better player. But even in that case, you don't know if he's willing to go play out the rest of his career anywhere else.
All right, so now let's be realistic about this. As you pointed out, they are beating teams that they should beat, and they have to continue to do this. I don't think anybody's predicting another cup this year. The question is whether they can get into the first round. But go back a few months now, And I know I sat there saying, okay, on one hand I've got Joel Quenneville, on the other hand I got Stan Bowman. You know, which one would I rather have? And I was not a big fan of the decision to fire Q. Nothing against Jeremy Collett. I don't know anything about the kid other than he's a kid. Again, until, 3 weeks ago, they were one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in hockey, now showing great improvement. What are your thoughts about the coaching change, about where the front office is at, and is Colleton so far what you'd hoped he would be?
Well, you know, I think the mistake they probably made was not doing this earlier. You know, Jeremy Colleton came in early November in a really tough situation. They were slumping. They lost four or five in a row, and he had to basically have a training camp for his new system. And it was, you know, this wasn't just a coach. This was a legendary head coach with the second most wins, who Kane and Taves had spent nearly their entire careers with. So it was enormous, shock to the system. So they were awful during those first 15 games. And it really, you know, I think all those things came together to make it bad. You asked about between Bowman and Quenneville. I don't think the question was, is it one or the other? It was that the team recognized that they were going into a different direction, and they had to start heading off in that direction. Decision was made that Joe Quenneville wouldn't be a part of it. And again, I think if they had done it before the season, they probably wouldn't be in the situation they are right now, where they have to win so many games in a row. They probably would have gotten off to a better start and found their groove earlier in the season. Whether or not this season really matters or is going to make the playoffs, I think it's a fun thing. A lot of people hope that they, you know, get a top five pick or a top three pick. There's no guarantee of that because of the way the NHL draft lottery works. So in that situation, it's, you know, let this team play it out and see what happens. It's been a lot of fun to watch the last six games, and I don't think they're going to regress. I think this season is going to play out in a positive way. It's just a matter of how far they can go.
Jimmy, I know you got to get to work. I really appreciate your time. Just one more question for you. It starts, I guess, with Sean McVay in the NFL. You've got Matt Nagy, the coach of the year this year, although 8 years older than McVay. Everybody's looking for the next young wunderkind, if you will, the next brilliant coach. That certainly was the hope when Colleton at 33 got the job. Are you seeing signs that he's got a long and possibly special career in the NHL in front of him?
Well, I see a guy who's respected, who proved his age is not a factor in whether he'll succeed or not succeed. When he came in, there's obviously we asked him a lot of questions. We brought up his age. He wasn't interested in talking about it. He deflected everything. And it's just so hard to say because, you know, in hockey more than any other team, maybe the NBA is different. You're really going to do only as well as your personnel. And that's what the Hawks have to improve. They weren't winning under Quenneville last year or this year, and that's because they just haven't had the talent that they've had in recent years. So I think if they can get the guys, I think he'll be a fine coach. It's just a matter of retooling and, you know, not falling into where the Red Wings are now, where they've been, you know, pretty awful for a few years after a great run. So you want to avoid that.
Jimmy, really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much. Everybody, you want to read Jimmy Greenfield in the Chicago Tribune, always on the Chicago Blackhawks, but particularly as they stay hot. They've been very entertaining. Hopefully you have a good one out there at the UC today. Again, follow Jimmy on Twitter at JCGreenX. We're going to take a very quick commercial break here, and when we get back, your phone calls, 312-644-6767. Got a bunch of stuff here on the text line at 67011. You can come in that way too, but I'd really prefer to talk to you. We've got a lot of folks are all riled up now about the Bulls, excited about the Hawks. Everybody's still about the Chicago Cubs. We'll get to some football stuff in a little while. Rich Campbell's going to stop by at 2 o'clock, but again, give me your phone calls, 312-644-6767. Figure out what we can do with these Cubs, Bulls, and Hawks, and White Sox as well. Back in a moment here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is really great to be with you all this afternoon. I am Hub Arkush, going to be here until 4 o'clock talking sports with you, taking your phone calls. Our phone number, 312-644-6767. We've got the lines lighting up right now because we've had some great guests this afternoon already. Chuck Swirsky stopped by at 1220 to talk some Bulls. Jimmy Greenfield was just here from the UC talking Chicago Blackhawks with us. We've also talked a fair amount of Chicago Cubs. We can get into the Sox, to the NFL, to the Bears, whatever you like. It's your show. Again, 312-644-6767. Real quick, before I get back to the phones, Tony, I'm coming to you in Naperville in a second. You've probably heard various hosts here at The Score talk about this. We're in this great studio. We've got these three TV monitors, obviously to keep us up with sports that is ongoing during the show. But you never know what's going to be on when you come in. And I came in after Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Herron this morning. One of the monitors apparently is out. But on the other hand, there was some skiing on NBC Sports Chicago. And then they had WGN Channel 9 on, and it was obviously an older movie, and I wasn't even paying attention until I all of a sudden looked up, and I realized, now, you can tell me, don't bother calling, but if you want to text 67011 if I'm right about this, the movie they're showing has to be It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World, and I don't know, for those of you who are younger, if you're even familiar with this movie, but if you're not, you have to see it. It is absolutely one of the most incredible casts in the history of movie making. And the reason I say that is because what caught my attention, I was talking to Jimmy, we were talking Blackhawks, I was trying to focus, but I'm looking at the screen in one scene. This is just in one scene from the movie where the car goes off the side of the hill. They had Jimmy Durante, Buddy Hackett, Milton Berle, Sid Caesar, Jonathan Winter, Mickey Rooney, and Norman Fell. Now, again, I'm old. I get that, you know, but I don't care. I mean, if you're over the age of 25 or 30, you had to have heard of some of those people and probably all of them. Durante, Hackett, Berle, Caesar, Winter, Rooney, and Fell. And that was in one scene from this movie. At some point this week, I'm going to have to watch It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World again. Unbelievable they could have that much talent in one place. All right, let's get to the phones. Tony is in Naperville. Tony, how you doing?
Very good. Thank you very much for taking my phone call.
Thanks for calling.
I was calling concerning the previous contributor, Mr. Greenfield.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded as if your question to him was more pointed to whether the Blackhawks made the correct decision in letting Joel Quenneville go as opposed to Stan Bowman.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really think he answered the question. I thought he really just said that, well, you know, if they were going to do it, Quenneville should have been let go earlier in the season so there could be continuity. So I was interested in your thoughts as to that point.
Well, you know, Tony, and again, now I'm just a fan. I have some expertise when it comes to football, even some expertise when it comes to baseball, because I really do study it a lot more. I'm just a huge Blackhawks fan, so let me preface it by saying that. Joel Quenneville is undeniably, is what I'm trying to say, one of the two, at least three or four greatest coaches in the history of the NHL. The only one who's got more wins is Scotty Bowman. There are probably a few with more cup titles. There are. But Q is it. In modern day hockey, he's the best coach we've seen since Scotty Bowman retired. I had no idea who Jeremy Colleton was, and that's why I tried to push it a little bit to say, based on what we've seen so far, are you excited about his future as a coach? And I thought Jimmy was objective and realistic, you know? On the other hand, Stan Bowman, there seems to be a fair amount of debate whether it's Stan Bowman or Scotty Bowman who's really pulling the strings here. Now, I know John McDonough, who is a dear friend who I've known since his days with the Cubs, who I have the ultimate respect for, has said on the air and told me off the air. This was a while ago. We visited at something. We bumped into each other. Actually, Swirsk was involved, too. And he insists that it's Stan Bowman, that Scotty is an advisor. Because if the question is between Scotty Bowman, GM, and Joel Quenneville, coach, that's a tough call. But if it's Stan Bowman, GM, and Joel Quenneville, coach, Quenneville's got the better resume, you know?
Yeah.
And so when they're telling us that this should be a playoff team and this is Q's fault, I'm looking at the talent out there and saying, I don't see it. Now, it's easy to get lost at the moment in this six-game win streak and the fact that they are creeping closer to being that playoff team that they said they should be, but will they be? And if they do get there, will they win a game in the first round? So I think the answer remains to be seen. But at the time, if I was making the move, if I was John, I might have taken John McDonough, I might have taken a closer look at my front office before I fired one of the greatest coaches in NHL history.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And I think this would have been a rebuild no matter whether Joe Quenneville stayed on or not. I mean, I think it's a retooling, maybe at best. And no, I agree with you. And I do think it's agreeable that, you know, the Bowmans are, I would say, a pair. They've always been since they came in. I don't know how much success can be attributable to Scotty Bowman versus Stan Bowman. I mean, I don't know if you really have to answer that question. But, you know, I didn't know if Stan Bowman's time in, you know, ran at this point.
Yeah, Tony, and thank you very much for the call. Listen, I can't, I'm not close enough to even guess as to how much is Stan and how much is Scotty. I trust John McDonough when he tells me it's Stan Bowman. But when he tells us, I should say it's Stan Bowman. The flip side of that, though, is we got to be fair and honest about this. If this run continues, if they do get into the playoffs, well, then Stan Bowman was right. than it was a playoff team. Some of the young talent was better than the way it was producing under Q, and the move probably made sense. So to me, it's a fair question, very fair question, but it's also a very open question right now, and I don't think we know the answer. I think that's what we continue to watch for. Hopefully they continue to win. I think even Q would tell you he hopes that they continue to win. Let's get to Emily out on the south side. Emily, I hope you're having a great Sunday so far.
Oh, yeah, great. Thanks a lot. First-time caller, love listening to the show.
Thank you.
I'm a diehard Cubs fan. I've been watching baseball for decades. My grandfather grew me up there. Now, I hear everybody's been talking about how they want to shorten these baseball games, lowering the mound, three batters per pitcher, etc. How about foul balls? I've watched games to where I've seen batters hit from 5, 15, to even 20 foul balls. Now, that's kind of ridiculous. If they can shorten how many foul balls a batter can hit, that'll save the pitcher's arm also.
Well, but Emily, what do you want to do? You want a batter to be out after so many foul balls?
Well, I don't know if they can figure something out to where maybe after maybe four, that can equal a strike or something. I really don't know.
Mm-hmm. You know,
trying to figure it out, it's like kind of strange.
It's an interesting question because I remember we were kids growing up and we would have the pickup games. We used to have a rule called three fouls and you're out. So, you know, you got the regular four balls, three strikes. But once you got to two strikes, you only had three foul balls. And they used to, I think they even did that in Little League. Now, I'm going back 50 years. So, you know, and this ain't Little League. So I understand your point. But there's the flip side of that is that we call those some of the greatest at-bats in baseball when they have these legendary, I don't know, you've seen 20 foul balls, but we see these 13, 14, 15 pitch at-bats. And it's actually also, it may lengthen the game, but it's a great part of the game and it's the great battle before between a great pitcher and a really good hitter. So, you know, I don't know if the urgency is to speed up the game so much as to get rid of some of the boredom. And so, because when you look at what they're talking about, a lot of it also could suggest that they're trying to score more runs. You know, when you talk about, for instance, forcing a relief pitcher to pitch to three hitters, that is almost certainly going to put the pitcher and the defense in a more difficult position against those hitters and those batters. And so they're not coming out and saying it like football does, but I think that they not only want to, you know, shorten these games, I think their bigger concern is to add more excitement. And again, there's this perception that comes with more scoring. I think that's probably true in baseball. I don't know that it's true in football. So, Emily, I get what you're saying, but I don't think there's an answer to what you do with the foul ball because that's a win for a hitter. That is often, you know, spoiling a good pitch that could get you out. And I just don't think that, I mean, I don't know what you could do with that. Now, you know, on the board, you had told Chris you want to talk about proposed rule changes. The big ones that they're looking at is, I just mentioned, they're talking about forcing relief pitchers or any pitcher coming in to pitch to at least three hitters. They're talking about the DH in the National League, which I hate. If they're going to do anything, get rid of the DH in the American League. That's me again. That's just style. I realize that there's a lot of people who totally disagree with that. And then they talk about the pitch clock. There actually already is a pitch clock. They just don't pay much attention to it. You can see it in Wrigley out underneath the big scoreboard. So get your question. Unfortunately, I don't have a good answer for you. The bottom of the hour was brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Looking to take family or friends out to a game? Try a Chicago Wolves Fan 4-Pack. You get four tickets. You get four Vienna Beef hot dogs, four drinks. You get popcorn for everybody at one low price and enjoy free parking this season courtesy of Kia. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for ticket information. Let's get to North Riverside, I think it says. Jody is on the line. Jody, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Hop?
Good, Jody.
First-time caller.
Thank you.
I just have a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Did you have a chance to see any of that new AAF football game last night, and what is your opinion on that, what that league's going to be all about?
You know, Jody, it's interesting. I watched the fourth quarter. I got back from Atlanta late last Monday night and got home from the office. Not if anybody cares, but I'm trying to set this up. Got home from the office one night all week because we were getting our draft guide to bed. And I owed my wife a date. And so we were out to dinner and we were visiting and we got home. And then I still managed to piss her off by going up and watching the football game. No, I knew it was on and I figured I better take a look because, and I will be watching as we go forward. And I'll tell you what, I was somewhat impressed. Now, you know, there was a lot of conversation between the broadcasters as to the differences in this league and some of the things they're doing and the way the players are getting compensated and they're being encouraged to be active in their communities. And that's all great stuff. I'm not trying to make light of it or knock it, but I don't care so much relative to my football. Okay, we'll care about that down the road if they stick around and they're successful. What I am so impressed by is the fact that Bill Polian, who is a Hall of Famer and one of the great front office minds in the history of the league, is all in on this. I mean, he's got his name all over it, and so he's not going to let it be. I mean, I consider the XFL somewhat of an embarrassment. You know, a lot of these other attempts have been a little hokey and not, you know, being able to figure out where their place in the hierarchy of the game should be. I had no idea how they had put some of these rosters together. And there were, you know, you're not going to find NFL stars out there, but there's a lot of guys who are somewhere between practice squad and bottom third of the roster guys who were out there on the field last night. And if this can be a developmental type feeder league, which I think is part of the concept, and if they can play as competitively as they did, you know, last night, I thought it was pretty good football. There was a couple that Kid Nelson made an incredible throw down the field. It looked very similar to the Brady throw to Gronkowski ahead of the winning touchdown, except it was in outside shoulder instead of inside shoulder. Whiteside, the quarterback for San Antonio, you know, made some real nice throws on that last field goal drive. So there was some talent out there, and I thought it was intriguing. And, you know, once I've spent the next couple of weeks making up to my wife and kids and grandkids the time I own, I'm going to be watching these games. They definitely captured my attention. I do think it's something that we should keep an eye on. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I don't know that you're going to see NFL teams' fortunes changed by players they get out of the AAF, but I do think there's going to be players who play over the next 9 weeks. It's a 10-week season, I believe, who will be on NFL teams this coming season. And so that makes it worth watching. Let's get one more before we have to take a break. We'll get to everybody, though. We don't have any more guests coming up for a little while. But right now we're going to Madison, where Mike is on the line.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Oh, good. I got a question. So with Clowney and Lawrence out on the free agent market this year, do you think the Packers have a shot at either one of them?
No.
And then...
No. Well, I didn't mean to cut you off. They're both going to get tagged. They're not moving. So the question is, do they do long-term deals with Houston and the Cowboys, or do they get franchise tags or transition tags? But I would be shocked if either, it's nothing against the Packers. I would be shocked if either one of those players left Dallas or Houston.
Well, do you see anybody on the market that could help them? Or,
well, if you're talking pass rush, I'll tell you the kid who could be movable is Dee Ford. He was a first-round pick in Kansas City, who took 3 years to develop. He had a big year rushing the passer this year, but the Chiefs are not in the best cap shape. He, of course, had that terribly costly penalty in the playoff game, but that's going to happen. They're not going to get rid of him because of that. But, of course, I can't ignore it as we talk about him. And so I think there's a – I don't know. Dee Ford may stay in Kansas City, but he could end up moving. They're the three big-time pass rushers that are available. You know, ironically, Mike, the Packers were second in the NFL in sacks last year. You're aware of that, I assume. Maybe they didn't come situationally where you wanted them or consistently enough from the same guys. I don't know if Kyler Fackrell is the real thing, but I'm not even
sure. I don't think so.
Well, but I mean, the numbers are the numbers, and so I'm not even sure. And of course, Mike Patton is back. I don't know if that's their biggest need. I think they still have tremendous needs on the interior of that offensive line. They got to decide if one of those kids is a franchise back, and if not, they got to get one. I think they need to get better at tight end, and on the defense, they got to get tighter up the middle as they have been trying for the last 4, 5, 6 years against the run. You know, pass rush has been a problem. It isn't coming from Clay Matthews anymore, who is one of those guys on the market, but I don't know if that's their biggest need.
All right.
Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And listen, I would, no matter who my favorite team was, a kid, I don't know how excited I'd be about Jadeveon Clowney, just because even though I'm told he has become more of a professional, I talked to one of his teammates after his rookie year who told me that he was the most spoiled, laziest superstar they'd ever seen, that everybody in that Texans locker room knew, you know, that this kid had a chance to be something special. but that he just had no work ethic whatsoever. And so that changed. I talked to some people down there this year who told me that he really had matured and grown. He's apparently just not going to be a great pass rusher, but he is a great penetrating defensive lineman. He's got more tackles for loss over the last two seasons than any other player in the NFL. And yet he's a different kind of guy, and you're certainly not going to give him a Khalil Mack contract. DeMarcus Lawrence is another one who, you know, they're not bad kids, but they just, they're not the complete mature adult that a Khalil Mack is, that a Von Miller is. And so you got to be careful with those deals, but they are great enough pass rushers, pure rushers, or in the case of Clowney, a great enough penetrator that they're not getting away without those tags. 312-644-6767. Ken, Jim, Pete, you guys are up next. We take this quick break and then we're back on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Chris Dickens has access to bumper music in and out, but I think he must store it in his own special file, because, you know, normally I come on, whoever's producing, they go with the Who, they go with the Stones, you know, we go maybe the Eagles, little Creedence Clearwater, of course, the Beatles. I've actually heard music since the 60s and 70s, you know. I've never heard any of what Chris plays, and yet it's great, man. I mean, every time I stop on my way into the segment and say, I'll listen to this for a little while. Chris Dickens producing today, doing an outstanding job as always. I am Hub Arkish. I want to get back to the phones in 1 second. First, I want to apologize. I made a mistake about 20, 30 minutes ago. Not a big one, but we try and clean it up when we make mistakes. I said that on the front page of this morning's Chicago Tribune sports section was the Zion Williamson story with the quote from Scottie Pippen calling him the best NBA prospect since Michael Jordan. I just looked closer. This is actually Friday's paper. So if you're running out to get today's trip, go ahead. It's a great paper. But this one was from Friday. So I'm sure some of you, I'm sure I probably got called out on the text screen. I didn't see it. Was focusing on the calls, but it was Friday. Scottie, I love Scottie. I loved watching him play. Scottie says some things on the air that I scratch my head every once in a while. I mean, maybe Zion Williams is a great prospect. There's no question about that. All deference to my buddy Chuck Swirsky. He's coming out this year, Chuck. We don't have to wait for the announcement. You know, and best prospect since Michael. You know, he's in the conversation, but I think we need to learn more about him. You know, I don't know that he's a guy I want shooting a 20-foot jumper with the game on the line. I know he shoots, I want to say 71% free throws, but I've never seen him throw anything but bricks up there. Now, I haven't watched every game, you know. So he makes a lot of steals, but I don't know that he's a great one-on-one defender. All of that said, he is almost certainly going to be the first pick. It is exciting as hell. I would love to see, you know, the Bulls have him here. I'm not criticizing him in any way. But the best prospect since Michael Jordan pretty much overlooks LeBron James, and doesn't pretty much, it does, you know. And I don't, we didn't know LeBron was going to be as good as he was coming out either. But I think there were probably a couple less question marks. So anyway, 312-644-6767. Let's get to Ken in Roscoe Village. Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And Hub, let me just take this opportunity to tell you how much I enjoy your work, especially
when you host
a segment like this on The Score. You're knowledgeable, you work real hard, and you have a really pleasant demeanor on the air. You're a pleasure to listen to.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate it.
I got two quick things on the Bears. Topic number one, I love Nagy as a head coach. I think long-term the Bears are in one of the best situations in that regard that we've been in many, many years. But I would have to give him a flunking grade on his handling of the offense in the playoff game against Philadelphia, especially for the following reason. Our offensive main threat, if you will, the guy that I think scares the opposition the most is Tyreek Cohen. And the play calling or the plays were not designed to give him very many touches. Someone said he only had three touches in the whole game, which is
four,
which would be four touches, mm-hmm. which is just not what you want to do when you have an explosive threat like that. Topic number two, place kicking. So this is in two parts. Number one, what do you consider the probability, the odds of Robbie Gould winding up as our next place kicker? And part two of that, if it's not Robbie Gould, who would you like to see become our next place kicker?
Well, Ken, thank you for the call. Thank you for all the kind words. Very small thing, believe me. I'm not trying to be a smartass, but it's Tariq, T-A-R-I-K. I only say that because it's Tyreek Hill. And the four touches were from the line of scrimmage. Of course, he returned punts and had the kickoff return at the end. What you need to understand, though, Ken, I'm sure you understand it, what you need to make part of the conversation, the Philadelphia Eagles made one of their goals taking Tariq Cohn away. And that's why that happened. And so when you go back and look at some of the film, they set up the defense to not let Tariq Cohn beat them. Now, that may still be on Matt Nagy because I don't think he at any point this season used Jordan Howard enough. He talked about as late as week 12, week 13 of the season, they were still trying to get their arms around how the running game fit with their offense and their passing game. But in the Eagles game, do I think they only scored 15 points because Matt Nagy screwed up? No, I really don't. I don't know if he had his best game. I don't think he had a bad game, so I certainly wouldn't put that on him. The Eagles set that defense up. They were not going to let Cohn get outside on them. They did not worry about him running inside, and Matt Nagy knows that if you're going to run inside, it's crazy not to give the ball to Howard instead of Cohn. You can do it once or twice or three times in the hope that he finds a seam. I know a lot of people focused on that, but at the end of the day, Tariq Cohn led the Bears in receptions with 71 catches this year. He got plenty of touches. You got to know how to use a weapon like that effectively, and he didn't have an answer for the way the Eagles set up the defense, but I can't really blame him for that. If anything, I think we have to question why he didn't use a couple other assets more. And by the way, one of the things that he would have done to react to that would have been to feature Trey Burton more, who wasn't available. Now, I was pissed, to be honest with you, with all the people who tried to suddenly write off Trey Burton as some kind of, you know, attitude problem or hypochondriac or bad guy or coward or, you know, all the silly things that were talked about because of the way that injury came up. I don't think any of that was fair or true, but at the end of the day, he wasn't available, and he would have been one of the best counterpoints to what the Eagles were doing defensively, and he didn't have that option to go to him. As far as the Bears' next place kicker, I will be pleasantly surprised if it's Redford Jones. He's a guy with a big leg who they worked out a bunch of guys, and, well, we can give him the rookie minimum and have him come in here and compete. I would be stunned if it was Cody Parkey. I don't know that it can be Robbie Gould, and the reason is that Robbie has been the best place kicker in the NFL since the Bears cut him. The numbers don't lie, 82 of 85. Steven Gostkowski, who has been the only guy who could compete with Justin Tucker for best place kicker in the league over the last five, six, seven seasons, is also a free agent. The Atlanta Falcons just released Matt Bryant, who may be in his 40s, but has been a really dependable kicker. There are a bunch of guys out there, but the two who are going to command at least $3 million a year, maybe as close to four, are Gostkowski and Gould. And I don't know, since the Bears are going to have to eat about 3.7, I don't know the exact number, it's just under $4 million in dead cap space on Parkey, that they can afford, with their current salary cap situation, to have $7 or $8 million tied up cap-wise in the place kicker position. I think Robbie would love to be here. He still owns his home here. I don't think he wants a pound of flesh. He's too good a guy for that. He's too smart. He's too mature. I'm sure he'd love to be a Bear again. I'm sure he'd love to finish his career here, but he'd be crazy to give him a hometown discount that would have to be as much as $2 million a year. I mean, why should he do that? And so I think they may just be, it's not that they're in salary cap hell, but they're got about $18, $19 million in cap space. Well, actually, they don't now that they redid Bobby Massey. I'm not sure exactly where they're at. They're probably at about, I'm going to guess, about $14 million in cap space now. They're almost certainly going to release Deion Sims, which should get them back to around 20. But then they got to have a starting safety and a starting nickel, depending on what they do with Adrian Amos and Bryce Callahan. I think they're going to have to add some depth at tight end. You can't really count on Adam Shaheen at this point. And I just said you're going to release Deion Sims. So to have the money to be able to sign Robbie Gould, I think, is the problem. I don't think it's whether they want him or not. I just don't know that they're going to be able to. Let's get to Jim, who is in Beecher. Jim, how you doing?
Happy Sunday, Hub.
Thank you.
Hey, well, first of all, just a real quick comment. That comment that a caller earlier about too many foul balls, mm-hmm. That was laughable at best, and I'll leave it at that. The reason I called was a comment about the Blackhawks. And I kind of wish Jay were here, Jay Zawoski, because to me he's kind of like the Hub Barkish of the NHL, and I'm complimenting both you gentlemen on that when I say that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I just want to concentrate on the one segment of the Blackhawks team, and that's the power play. Going back better than a year, I'm going back, again, prior to going back past last year, the Blackhawk power play was, it was a pretty dead-ass unit, okay? I'll call it that. And Joel Quenneville had seemingly plenty of time to right the ship there and come on, let's get this power play going. He didn't do it. He couldn't do it, him and his coaching staff, for whatever the reasons, okay? So you bring in Jeremy Colleton, okay? Nobody really knows, okay, who is this guy? Well, after a month, after he kind of gets situated coming into a tough spot, and all of a sudden the Blackhawk power play goes from last in the league, and I think they're now ninth or tenth in the league, which means over the last couple months they've been the best in the league. What does that tell me? It's coaching, and that being the case, it was probably, in retrospect, seemingly going forward, an astute move by Stan Bowman and John McDonough that I guess the coaching, the element of coaching by Joel Quenneville had maybe started falling on deaf ears with the team, and seemingly now they've been rejuvenated. Your comments.
All right, Jim, I'm going to ask you to hold for one second. I'm going to get you my comments. Actually, I'm going to have to let you go, but I want you to keep listening because we've got Pete here who also has a Blackhawks question. I want to make sure I get him in before the break, and then we'll lump it all together. Pete, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you? It's an honor to speak with you, Hub.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm right there with this guy as far as the power play. Mm-hmm. What success they've had in the last 10, 15 games, it's unbelievable, undeniable. The other thing is I don't think Quenneville was real good at relating to the younger players. And a player would get in his doghouse, you know, and he was a stern coach in that regard. And, you know, for us to succeed, we have to have young players that need to get experience first off and get into the flow. But they also need to be what helps this team win as a team, because you cannot have, you know, you have high price players and then you have these other players that have to come in at this, you know, these young rookies at the low salaries. It's the only way to do it, to win.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pete, thank you for the call as well. And for both Pete and Jim, guys, you know, I think we have to be a little more patient and then we'll be able to say, you know, what was right and what was wrong with the firing of Q and the hiring of Colleton. There's no question. The team was awful, you know, under Joel Quenneville, not just early this year, but last year as well. That things had turned. They weren't competing anymore. And my understanding from talking to some sources is that a big part of the problem that Stan Bowman and the front office had with Q is that everybody is going after sabermetrics now. Everybody's going after advanced statistics, no matter what sport it is. Obviously, it started with baseball, but it's happened now in basketball, hockey, and football. And apparently, Joel Quenneville just didn't want to deal with it. Apparently, he wanted to be more of an old school coach and continue to work his players and talk about the physical part and, you know, getting greasy in front of the net and all that. And it reached the point where the front office believed that they needed to move into the modern era. And they certainly did that with the youngest coach in the league, in Jeremy Colleton. I don't know how much he uses advanced statistics in the NHL either. But I think on the bigger picture that we're talking about here, when Colleton came in, remember, for, you know, what was it? It's got to be 30 to 35 games. They continued to be the worst team in hockey. It is just these last seven, eight games that they're playing much better. They've been converting at 40% on the power play recently, which is at historic levels, which is what raised their standing overall to ninth or tenth in the league. So whether Colleton has actually fixed that or whether they're just hot right now, I can't count how many times I've heard Toews say this year, the only difference is some pucks are going in now. I mean, he keeps saying we're doing all the same things. We got some pucks going in. And there's some truth in that. You know, and you can't take this 6 or 7 game window and saying, oh, now we see they were right. Q needed to go. Colleton needed to come. Bowman was right. It's starting to look better. And so I think we got to continue to be patient and enjoy it. My hope is that they continue to win and make a run to the playoffs. And at some point we'll be able to put a definitive, exclamation point on this. But for now, it seems to be trending in the direction of it was time for Q to go. Colleton's doing a better job. But six games don't make a season, so we'll see what happens next. John is in Fox Lake. John, I want you to hold on, because even though I've got a guest coming on, it's Rich Campbell, who covers the NFL with me, and you have an AAF question, so I'm going to bring you on with Rich right on the other side of this break. First, this quick break, and then we're talking some NFL football right here at The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.